What kind of country do we want to be? Most of us want the same things. Good schools in our neighborhoods, racial justice, the freedom to love who we want.
The day I was born, the idea of an out candidate was laughable. Yet earlier this year, I campaigned for the presidency, often with my husband Chasten at my side.
It's not exactly about Carrie Fisher, but it was inspired by our time together. And so the spirit of that time is all in those pages.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBT radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle. Trump's antitrust healthcare rule blocked in federal court. Baldwin and Buttigieg star in a very queer Democratic convention. And Byron Lane's memories of Leia make for fabulous fiction. All that and more this week, now that you've tuned in to This Way Out.
I'm Wenzel Jones.
And I'm Melanie Keller.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending August 22nd, 2020. The Trump administration was on the wrong side of the law involving transgender people again this week, one day before a rule allowing healthcare providers and insurance companies to discriminate against transgender patients was set to take effect. It was blocked by Brooklyn-based U.S. District Judge Frederick Block. The Health and Human Services Department had tried to overturn provisions of President Barack Obama's Affordable Care Act that banned bias based on gender identity. On August 17th, Judge Block cited the recent Supreme Court rule banning anti-LGBTQ workplace discrimination. He wrote that, "It seems a sensible thing to reflect on the decision's impact." Since the Health and Human Services Department has been unwilling to take that path voluntarily, the court now imposes it. The ruling granted a request from the Human Rights Campaign on behalf of two transgender plaintiffs for a preliminary injunction to prevent the new Trump rule from taking effect until its constitutionality is decided.
Another anti-trans law was blocked by another U.S. federal judge also on August 17th, this one in the state of Idaho. It prohibited transgender high school and college girls and women from participating in women's athletic competitions. Idaho Chief U.S. District Court Judge David C. Nye pointed out that the International Olympic Committee and the U.S. National Collegiate Athletic Association both, as he wrote, allow transgender women to participate in female sports teams once specific criteria are met. Ironically, Nye was appointed by President Trump in 2017. The American Civil Liberties Union filed suit in April challenging the Idaho law. Nye's temporary injunction prevents it from taking effect until a full trial can be held. According to Yahoo Sports, lawmakers in Alabama, Arizona, Georgia, and Tennessee have recently considered similar legislation. ACLU, LGBT, and HIV Project senior staff attorney Gabriel Arculus warned that if politicians in other states attacked transgender youth, they will face similar challenges.
LGBTQ parents are also under attack by the Trump administration. The U.S. State Department is appealing a federal court decision that a married gay couple's baby, born via surrogate in Canada, is a U.S. citizen. U.S. District Judge Theodore D. Chuang ruled in June that Roe and Adiel Kaviti's daughter, Kesem, is automatically a U.S. citizen by virtue of her dad's legal marriage, just as she would be if her parents were heterosexual. The Kavitis are Israeli transplants who are now both U.S. citizens living in Chevy Chase, Maryland. The State Department appealed the ruling in the Richmond, Virginia-based 4th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals on August 13th. The queer advocacy group Lambda Legal represents the Kavitis. They also represent Derek Mize and Jonathan Gregg, a gay couple in Atlanta, Georgia. They sued the State Department after it refused to recognize the U.S. citizenship of their daughter, Simone Mize Gregg, who was born via a surrogate in England. The law seems pretty clear. Section 301C of the Immigration and Nationality Act states that a baby born abroad to married parents is a U.S. citizen at birth when both parents are U.S. citizens and one of them has resided in the United States at any point prior to the baby's birth. Both couples meet those criteria. The Trump administration apparently does not want to recognize their marriages as legitimate. That flies in the face of the U.S. Supreme Court's 2015 marriage equality ruling.
Meanwhile, the Supreme Court has scheduled oral arguments for November 4th in a case involving religiously affiliated adoption and fostering agencies that get taxpayer funding. It tests whether or not such organizations can reject applications from otherwise qualified same-gender couples. The Trump administration filed a legal brief in June, siding with Philadelphia's Catholic Social Services. That agency challenged the city's anti-bias ordinance, which forced them to either accept same-gender applicants or lose city funding.
Even when he may think he's doing the right thing, President Donald Trump still has a tough time. Trump announced a formal presidential pardon for Susan B. Anthony this week. The famous lesbian suffragist was arrested in 1872 and fined $100 for voting illegally. Outraged, and insisting that the Constitution already gave her that right, she declared, "I shall never pay a dollar of your unjust penalty." And she never did. While Anthony worked to get pardons for other arrested suffragists, she saw her record as a badge of honor. She pointedly rejected any suggestion of a pardon for herself during her lifetime. Trump issued the pardon during the week's observance of the 100th anniversary of the 19th Amendment to the Constitution, which secured the right to vote for white women. His move was criticized as more of a lame effort to curry favor with female voters than to honor Anthony. A statement from the National Susan B. Anthony Museum and House in Rochester, New York, urged Trump to rescind the pardon and instead enforce and expand 1965's landmark Voting Rights Act and to speak out against any form of voter suppression. Trump is instead sounding false alarms about voter fraud, and the Republican-controlled Senate has declined to consider voting rights protections.
In related news, the Gay Log Cabin Republicans group has once again lauded Donald Trump for his pro-LGBTQ+ record, apparently unconcerned that he lacks one. Board Chairman Robert Kabel wrote in an op-ed for USA Today, seriously, that Trump Republicans have advanced the rights of LGBTQ people while Democrats have ignored them. Trump tweeted that the endorsement was my great honor. As is his habit, he defied reality by claiming to be the most pro-gay president in American history.
Two Uganda government officials have been criminally charged with torture and degrading, inhumane treatment of 20 young LGBTQ people. Supporters say their homeless shelter outside Kampala was selectively targeted for a raid in March. The youths were charged with violating COVID-19 lockdown rules limiting public gatherings. They were held for weeks without access to legal counsel or the ability to apply for bail. Some of the detainees are HIV positive and were denied needed medications. Thanks to local activism and pressure from a number of international human rights groups, all 20 detainees were finally released without charge after 50 days in squalid conditions. The Ugandan government ordered each to be compensated the equivalent of more than $1,300. The queer-supportive NGO, Human Rights Awareness and Promotions Forum, initiated civil proceedings after officials refused to file criminal charges. The civil case targets the state, the local town councilman who launched the raid and led the physical abuse, and a high-ranking prison official. Town councilman Haj Abdul Kiyimba is seen in photos right after the raid whipping some of the detainees. He and prison officer Philemon Woniala will appear in court on September 23rd.
Finally, even as leading Putin opponent Alexei Navalny lay in a coma after probably being poisoned, a well-known Russian performance artist who survived his opposition to the regime has floated the symbol of LGBTQ pride over Moscow. The artist was the mayor of the northern Russian city of Arkhangelsk until he announced that he intended to challenge Putin for the presidency in 2007. He was, of course, arrested, charged with abuse of office, and given a 3-year probationary sentence. He has since gained renown as a modern artist and gallery owner. Dozens of helium balloons hoisted his giant rainbow flag from Moscow's Maheshnia Square and floated it towards the Kremlin, no doubt infuriating the occupants. The artist told the opposition news outlet Novaya Gazeta that he was responding to his government's criticism of a number of foreign embassies in Moscow for flying the rainbow flag during June Pride Month, including the embassies of Canada, the UK, and the US. That's considered to be a violation of the law against gay propaganda that Putin pushed through in 2013. The artist wanted to leave no doubt about who deserved credit for flying the rainbow. Alexander Donskoy attached his name to a large banner along the bottom of the flag.
That's NewsWrap, Global Queer News with Attitude, for the week ending August 22nd, 2020. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
NewsWrap is recording remotely during the COVID-19 emergency, but is still being written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian D. Shazer, and brought to you by you.
Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more.
And you can listen to NewsWrap each week by subscribing to our This Way Out Radio YouTube channel. For This Way Out, I'm Melanie Keller. Stay healthy.
And I'm Wenzel Jones. Stay safe.
She was full of those moments of just humility, and she was just living her life with no real sense of just how amazing she was.
Who was she, and was she really so bored? The secret revealed later in the program.
It came from China. They should have never let it escape. They should have never let it out. But it is what it is.
Donald Trump is clearly in over his head. He simply cannot be who we need him to be for us. It is what it is.
What we do echoes through generations.
Forced by the COVID-19 pandemic to take its quadrennial gathering out of the convention centers and into cyberspace, the U.S. Democratic Party has nominated former Vice President Joe Biden and California Senator Kamala Harris to replace the current occupants of the White House. Maybe meeting at a medically safe distance actually made it easier for the August 17th to 20th virtual convention to present a diverse tapestry of its constituents. Minority representatives were deftly mainstreamed, and intersectionalities were woven in a way that makes highlighting these specifically LGBTQ moments more difficult than in the past. Queer and queer-related speakers included Pennsylvania State Representative Malcolm Kenyatta, Georgia State Representative Sam Park, Long Beach, California Mayor Robert Garcia, Virginia House of Delegates member Danica Rome, Maine State Representative Craig Hickman, and Judy and Dennis Shepard, the parents of Matthew Shepard, whose murder led to the passage of the Hate Crimes Prevention Act.
There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right, everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their mind, getting so much resistance from behind. We gotta stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down.
Outpost star Billy Porter capped the first night, accompanied by Buffalo Springfield's Stephen Stills, for a modern rendition of the 60s band's For What It's Worth. One lesbian and one gay man were tagged for major addresses. Senator Tammy Baldwin of Wisconsin has not only been a congressional leader in the healthcare debate, her home state is considered pivotal in the Democratic presidential race.
What kind of country do we want to be? Do we want to be a country where millionaires get to dodge taxes, or one where working families get a break? Do we want to be a country where medical bills bury people in debt, or one where health care is affordable for all, or where tens of thousands of people die from a virus, or where the American dream lives? I think we know the answer to that fundamental question, because most of us want the same things: good schools in our neighborhoods, racial justice, the freedom to love who we want, dignity in our work, and an economy where small businesses and working families thrive. And over the past months, we've added another to that list: a nation free from COVID. That's why Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are the only answer in this election.
Former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg himself made a decent showing in the primary campaign for the party's presidential nomination, the first serious out gay contender for the role.
I believe in this country, because America, uniquely, holds the promise of a place where everyone can belong. We know that for too many and for too long, that promise has been denied. But we also know America is at its best when we make that circle of belonging wider. Just over 10 years ago, I joined a military where firing me because of who I am wasn't just possible, it was policy. Now, in 2020, it is unlawful in America to fire someone because of who they are or who they love. The very ring on my finger, a wedding we celebrated, here where I'm standing, reflects how this country can change. Love makes my marriage real, but political courage made it possible, including that of Joe Biden, who stepped out ahead even of this party when he said that marriage equality ought to be the law of the land. There is a long way to go. But if this much can change between 2010 and 2020, imagine what could change between now and 2030. Imagine what we could achieve, this coalition we are building this very season, gathering progressives and moderates, independents, and even what I like to call future former Republicans, standing for an America where everyone belongs. Joe Biden is right. This is a contest for the soul of the nation. And to me, that contest is not between good Americans and evil Americans. It's the struggle to call out what is good in every American. It's up to us. Will America be a place where faith is about healing and not exclusion? Can we become a country that lives up to the truth that black lives matter? Will we handle questions of science and medicine by turning to scientists and doctors? Will we see to it that no one who works full-time can live in poverty? I trust Joe Biden and Kamala Harris to guide us toward that better future, because I've seen up close their empathy and their capacity, just as I've seen my fellow Americans' capacity to support and include one another in new ways and do better by the promise of America. The day I was born, the idea of an out candidate seeking any federal office at all was laughable. Yet earlier this year, I campaigned for the presidency, often with my husband Chasten at my side, winning delegates to this very convention. Now I come to this convention proudly supporting Joe Biden and Kamala Harris.
That was former Democratic presidential hopeful Pete Buttigieg speaking in support of Joe Biden and Kamala Harris for president and vice president of the United States. The Republican Party's convention is planned to be more of a hybrid virtual in-person event held August 24th through 27th. Thus far, the speaker's list is dominated by Donald Trump and members of his family. A Star is Bored is a sparkling new novel by gay author Byron Lane. It's a clever Hollywood adventure in fiction, but in fact, it draws heavily on Lane's real-life experiences as personal assistant to the legendary writer and film star Carrie Fisher. Our John Dyer V took his first trip to Zoomland for a conversation with Lane about his novel and about other projects he has in the works.
Byron Lane is an actor, producer, and author with an impressive and eclectic roster of projects that cross all media. Starting out as a TV journalist in New Orleans, he worked his way west to Los Angeles, where he eventually wrote and starred in the feature film Herpes Boy with Octavia Spencer and Beth Grant. Next came the indie comedy Last Will and Testicle, which was so well received that it was developed into a 2-season web series. Lane next conquered the legitimate stage with his outrageous play, Tilda Swinton Answers a Craigslist Ad, and that show did so well it's traveled around the world. Despite some technical glitches and the dreaded Zoom learning curve, Mr. Lane and I chatted briefly about the play, including the possibility of its becoming a series.
I am trying to put together a sitcom with my friends from the Tilda Swinton play. We would love to do kind of a Waiting for Guffman style series about putting that silly show on the road.
Absolutely wonderful. And that was going to be one of my questions, was how can I see this play? Because just the title alone makes me go, oh God. But then reading about it, it just sounds like so much fun.
Oh, John, it's been so fun. And it's LGBTQ. It's about self-discovery and self-acceptance. And we've done it all over the world, really. We did Edinburgh, Scotland twice. We've done it in London and New York a couple times, in San Francisco. It always sells out. Things are so weird right now with the pandemic. I don't know when theater will be back to normal, but I hope soon. And I hope we can get it on the road again. It's just been, it's a joy to do. I love my castmates. It's really fun. I think you'll really dig it, especially if you love the Stars Board. You'll really love the Tilda play.
Our conversation moved on to the main topic. Lane's brilliant, funny, and dramatic Roman à Clef, A Star is Bored. I just had to ask about the hysterically funny name that the main character, Charlie, is called throughout the book. No spoilers here, but it is uttered by our favorite, brainier-than-thou, not always sober, sci-fi blockbuster star, Kathy Cannon. Did Lane get called by that epithet in real life by our own global treasure, Princess Ms. Fisher?
For the most part, the list in the book does include some of the names that she actually called, and it was all very sweet and very lovely. And sometimes I would call her stepmom, or she had her own kind of nicknames that I called her. And it really was theater. It really was a sitcom every day.
I also imagine that it was for you, there was a keeping up aspect, because she's such a brilliant mind. And it comes through in the book that this person's mind never stopped.
She was so smart. She really was a genius. I remember one time she wrote an article for something, and she would mostly handwrite everything. So she had these yellow legal pads, and she would write and write and write, and then turn and then write on the back, and then write in circles. It was marvelous. I remember one time she was writing something for some magazine, and we were traveling. She was doing a show, like a comedy show. We were in some hotel room. She was wrapping it up, and I remember reading it and saying to her, "God, this is just so brilliant." And she was kind of taken aback, and she was like, You think this is brilliant? And I was like, what? Are you kidding? Yes, everything you do is brilliant. And it was almost this weird moment of like, do I not tell you enough? Or do people not tell you? And do you not know? Like you are a marvel. And I don't know, she was full of those moments of just humility and easygoing. She was just living her life with no real sense of like just how amazing she was, you know?
I just yesterday was reading a quote of hers basically saying, if I'd known how big Star Wars was going to get, I wouldn't have done it because I wasn't interested in that fame.
Yeah, she was not, as they say, a fame whore or anything like that. She loved Star Wars, loved doing it, loved talking about it, loved the fans. So once it was part of her life, it was a part of her life.
In terms of looking towards the horizon, first question is, are you turning the book into a screenplay?
I think about that all the time. So it really just matters what the marketplace wants. So if film and TV rights are, they're on the table. So I don't know where the novel, what iteration it might take next, but I'm open to everything.
I know that you're getting strong reviews already. So I'm sure that conversation will speed towards you in no time.
Thanks, sir. Can you see it as a movie?
I think it would have to be handled like the right way. You know, because you've made it a fictional story, but people are going to go in going, oh, we're going to see what she was really like.
Right.
It's a balancing act, but absolutely.
Cool.
Yeah. You know, series, whatever. There's a lot there. A lot of what you write about does involve health aspects.
I never even put that together, but you're right. All of my projects have had some either physical or mental health element, and many of them also have like a magical lady element. So A Star is Bored has the magical Kathy Cannon, Tilda Swinton, obviously, and the other ones have some mother figures who come to aid. I guess I got a little genre, I got a little pattern there.
Are there any other projects that you're currently working on, or is it all about the book right now?
Well, today, right now, it's all about the book. It's been so fun to connect with booksellers all over the world and people like yourself who have questions and are interested. I'm writing more books. I have a bunch of ideas I'm kicking around and trying to land on the one that'll be my next novel. So I'm busy over here. I'm busy clacking away, typing away, trying to see what's next.
So if you would like to tell us, you know, website names or where we can find any of your material, obviously the book is going to be in stores, but do pitch where we can find you.
Cool. So I have a website that's just my name, byronlane.com, and all my links are there. But I'm also on Twitter at Byron Lane, and I'm on Instagram at byronlane.com. Some other Byron Lane has at Byron Lane. I message him and he keeps ignoring me. There's no hope. So I've just done byronlane.com for Instagram. There are like two other Byron Lanes. One's a lawyer in Texas, and then this other guy, I think he's in Georgia or something. And I do wonder if they get annoyed by the other Byron Lane doing public things, but I can't help it.
And winding up, is there anything else that you wanted to share with us or tell us about the book? Because all I can say is get out there and read the book. It's wonderful.
Oh, that really means a lot. Thanks, friend. No, I'm excited to get it out into the world. I'm excited for people to read it. I hope people enjoy it. It really does come from the heart. And I did write it so that, you know, I do hope that in 10 years, I can pick it up and look through some of those scenes and read some of the things that happened and be reminded of a very special time in my life. So it's not exactly about Carrie Fisher, but it was inspired by our time together. And so the spirit of that time is all in those pages. So I'm glad you connected with it. I'm glad you enjoyed it. And I hope other people do too.
It gets very, I would say brutally honest, but you don't let it get too dark, even though you go a little dark. And so I think there's a lot for a lot of different people in there. Absolutely.
Thanks, John.
I really appreciate your sharing this time with me. You know, technical difficulties aside, next time we will be face-to-face, I promise. And, you know, this is all part of what is 2.0 in terms of everything from an interview to a show. So you're helping me to learn, too.
I get it. I've only done like a handful of these Zoom things, so I barely know what's happening.
Well, you look like you've got it all together. So again, congratulations and thank you. And I look forward to the next thing because I know it's going to be a lot of fun, just as your book is.
John, you're the best. Thanks, man.
This is John Dyer with Byron Lane for This Way Out.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. Some program material this week came from Wenzel Jones and Melanie Keller, produced by Brian DeShazer, and from John Dyer V. Billy Porter with Stephen Stills and John Williams performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, the Ivana Foundation, the estate of Christopher David Trentum, and donors David Hunt and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. Look for This Way Out Radio on social media, email tworadio@aol.com, or write to us at P.O. Box 1065, Los Angeles, California, 90078, USA. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and all of us at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Thanks for listening online at thiswayout.org and on WVEW Brattleboro, Vermont, 3UG Alexandria, Victoria, KAOS Olympia, Washington, and a wide array of community terrestrial and internet radio stations around the world, including this one. Stay safe, stay healthy, and stay tuned, y'all.